Are you fed up with the state of New York? With the corruption, the waste, the incompetence? Well, then you're listening to the right show. This is Effective Radio with Bill Samuels. Bill's not a politician. He's not a pundit. He's an innovator, a fighter, a maverick. And now, after a lifetime of success as a businessman, he's taking on his toughest challenge yet, making New York great again. This isn't a talk show. It's about action. For the next hour, join Bill and his producer, Morgan Peckman, as they shake up this state. Get ready. It all starts now on Effective Radio with Bill Samuels.
Don't mess with Bill.
Good morning, boys and girls, on this very cold Sunday. And happy Valentine's Day, certainly to my daughter and my wife. And thank you for listening to Effective Radio. I'm your host, Bill Samuels. Today, we're going to be keeping you warm with some great discussion with two outstanding guests. In the first half of the show, we'll be speaking with the Dean of New York Congressional Delegation and currently the second longest serving member of the House of Representatives, Charlie Rangel. Then the second half of the show, we'll go with someone somewhat younger. We'll be talking with New York City Councilman Ben Kalos, one of the really rising young leaders here in the Big Apple and one of a group of new city council people that are very, very interesting. Ben is truly an innovative legislator, and I should say he worked for me for a number of years when he was executive director of the think tank I founded, Effective New York. But before we leap into these discussions, I want to acknowledge my co-host and producer, Morgan Peckma, who's here in the studio with his hat on for some reason. It's sort of cold in here, Morgan. And so anyway, good morning, Morgan. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Bill. Now that I've been here in the studio for a while, I'm starting to thaw and getting fired up for our show today. Of course, being that this is a politics show, we have to start off by discussing the truly earth-shattering development on Sunday in U.S. politics, the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Justice Scalia, who was archly conservative and a so-called originalist when it came to interpreting the Constitution, was beloved by the right in this country and reviled by the left. His unexpected death at the age of 79 could bring about a sea change in the nation's highest court and radically reshape its ideological balance, which until yesterday was divided between four conservative justices, four liberal justices, and one swing vote, Justice Anthony Kennedy. Now President Obama will have the opportunity to nominate the third justice of his presidency and flip the court firmly to the left. But already on Sunday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that he would not allow a vote on any nominee President Obama put forth, a stance the Republican candidates for president firmly agreed on in their most recent debate. But what are your thoughts on whether President Obama should be allowed to appoint a justice in this, his final year in office?
Frankly, I hate this whole discussion. The court should be about brilliant men that we respect.
And women.
And women, yes, of course. And the fact that we have this debate, whether the court's liberal or conservative, I don't think is healthy for the country. Yes, we can criticize Scalia for making comments about the court, quote, largely signing on to the so-called homosexual agenda, or his comment that a system of government that makes the people subordinate to a committee of nine unelected lawyers does not deserve to be called a democracy on the same-sex marriage issue. But that's not what it's about for me. I happen to think that it would be very healthy if Obama nominated someone and had to get the Republican support. If we could find and appoint someone who is not a doctrinaire conservative or liberal, but is brilliant, who we respect, I think it would be healthy for the court. I know that's not a standard view, but I don't think it's healthy that the court becomes strictly a political place versus a place where we put brilliant men who creatively think out what our Constitution says.
You know, in a lot of ways, I totally agree with you, Bill, but unfortunately, that type of bipartisanship or nonpartisanship has to work both ways, right? That the Senate Republicans would have to allow a vote in order for that to occur, right?
Well, that's part of the negotiation. That's why it should be done now versus saying, let's see if Clinton or a Republican or Sanders wins and vote someone in next year that is very partisan. I'm just tired of all of this.
Yeah, hopefully someone who will come in and help reverse Citizens United decision.
Well, that's for sure.
Well, when we come back, we're going to, from these messages, we're going to speak with Congressman Charlie Rangel. Stay tuned here to Effective Radio with Bill Samuels.
You're on your way to a dinner at a friend's house. They ask you to pick up some beer. You don't want to grab a six-pack of the same old suds everyone drinks. You want to stand out, impress. I'm Al Gattulo. The Craft Beer Cast will give you the info you need so you don't pick up the wrong brew and look like a fool. The Craft Beer Cast airs Sundays at 1 p.m., and I'll drop knowledge on barley and hops like you've never heard before. Interviews with the craft beer makers around the country, suds and duds where I tell you the latest brews I liked and disliked, and so much more. Join me, won't you?
It's Al Gattulo's Craft Beer Cast, Sunday afternoons at 1. On AM 970, The Answer.
Something special happens when New Yorkers come together to work for the common good. When we look beyond private interests to build strong communities and demand ethical state governments, we're doing our duty as citizens and engaging in a healthy democracy. I'm Susan Lerner, Executive Director for Common Cause New York. But right now, most New Yorkers, like millions of Americans, believe our democracy is out of balance, tilted to the wealthy few. Many Americans have given up. Non-voters have sold out to cynicism, giving the power of their vote away by not showing up. They bought a lie. Google us at Common Cause New York to learn the truth. We're a citizens' lobby of more than 400,000 Americans working in Albany and across the country to fight corruption and pass real solutions to the problems our democracy faces. Join us at Common Cause New York and help ensure that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Long before it was popular to stand up to Governor Cuomo, he had the guts to take him on. You're listening to Bill Samuels on Effective Radio, AM 970, The Answer.
I did it my way.
Good morning, everybody. Our first guest today is a very young man, but he's already a living legend. Congressman Charlie Rangel has represented New York and the U.S. House of Representatives since 1971, making him currently the chamber's second longest serving member and the dean of our state's congressional delegation. Congressman Rangel was a founding member of the Congressional Black Caucus. He's been one of the guiding lights of Harlem and New York City and New York State for over five decades, and a national model of effectiveness and principle as a legislator. I recently had the tremendous pleasure, and I hope Congressman remembers, at an event for his colleague, Carolyn Maloney. And as I was talking with the congressman, he gave me incredible background on the 1970 gubernatorial race between my father, Howard Samuels, and Arthur Goldberg. I must say I'm old enough now that I'm not sure I remember a lot of the details of the conversation, except it was brilliant history. So for me, it's just wonderful to have the congressman on the show. We're disappointed that he's retiring from the House, but he still has an entire year in office, and the thought of losing his contribution to our nation and state makes me miss him already. So I'm very excited and honored to welcome Congressman Charles Rangel to Effective Radio. Congressman, thank you so much for joining me and Morgan on our show.
Bill, you don't know how close it would have been that you could have been son of the Governor Samuels of the great state of New York in the 1970s. It was a primary that Arthur Goldberg really wasn't that popular, and of course, I just seized the opportunity to support your dad. What I did not know is that a lot of unions that had endorsed me had also endorsed Goldberg, and they attempted to disendorse me. Well, it didn't work, and I won, but it was a great experience.
Well, you know, what's really great is that you and I and some of our other friends, as we get older, are still active and want to make this state and city a better place.
But and country.
And country, absolutely. Well, I'm a history buff, And I love hearing the reflections of history like you and I discussed. So looking back over your 45 years in the House, I would love to hear about some of your proudest legislative achievements, which are many and could take up 10 shows. But if you could pick a couple, I think our listeners would love to hear it.
Well, I think the empowerment zone, an idea that I stole from England, worked with Jack Kemp in the House of Representatives, which allowed cities to compete with the federal government by offering proposals that if selected, and of course New York was selected, the federal government would supply one-third of the funds to invest in that particular community. And the city itself would have to put up one-third and the state one-third. And so it was an effort, one, to bring all of local, state, and federal government together, but more importantly, concentrated on the poorest communities in the country. And we overdid it in Harlem because from the empty lots and the deteriorated buildings and the lack of employment, we're now fighting against gentrification as crime is down, everything is up, and it's a different community, and a lot has to be attributed to the empowerment zones that President Clinton helped me create and endorse. The earned income tax credit is something that everyone now is advocating. And what it does is that it says that no family should be working hard every week and at the end of the day end up still in poverty. And so being on the Ways and Means Committee, we couldn't hand out checks in terms of welfare assistance. But what we could say that if you filed, even though you had no tax liability, as an incentive for having worked, we'll give you a tax credit in the form of a check, since there would be no tax liability. Emotionally, of course, when Dan Roskinkowski, as chairman of the committee, allowed my amendment to withdraw tax assistance to any U.S. firm doing business in South Africa during the time that we were fighting against apartheid, once Ronald Reagan signed that and it became the law, all of the big multinationals pulled out of South Africa, and was the beginning of the crumbling of it. And lastly, I think my low-income housing credit, it allowed for people to invest in bonds to get tax-free, and these bonds would be used for low-income housing. 90% of new developer housing throughout the country was based on this. But my greatest thing is being able to participate in the government of this great country for 48 years. So many Americans can complain about what they don't like. Some don't even register. Some don't vote. But to have the opportunity to participate and express the aspirations of the people in your district and around the country, there hasn't been one day that I haven't thanked God for this great opportunity.
You know, Congressman, I'm proud as a Democrat, as I'm sure you are, that we have two candidates for president that are substantive and have tremendous depth. You, like many of us in New York, support Hillary Clinton. We love her experience. And back before the Iowa caucus, you both expressed a surprise at how well Bernie Sanders was doing and predicted if he did well in those first states, which he has done, that things will be quite different as he moves into more diverse states like South Carolina. What's your view now of how this presidential race is going, and how do you think Hillary will bounce back?
First of all, if I was a candidate, I would not want anybody in there competing against me saying it's a good thing for me. But since I'm not a candidate, I think it's good for the party. I think it's good for Hillary Clinton. And I really think it makes for an exciting and, as you pointed out, Bill, a positive campaign dealing with the issues that Americans are concerned with and Democrats have embraced. I am not a political pundit who understands how in the hell Iowa and New Hampshire should be measured in terms of success for a candidate nationwide. Vermont and New Hampshire, whatever they decided, would allow me to pass on and see what America decided. And so it would be like taking a vote in Harlem and determining who should be the president.
There's a good idea.
yeah, sure would be, but it wouldn't help the candidate that much when they got involved in New Hampshire. So I think this is the beginning. I wish we had won everything, but hell, it's not necessary. And I think we're getting more publicity than we would if we just had Hillary Clinton as a candidate. And I feel so embarrassed for the country that the Republican slate of candidates looks more like Saturday Night Live than the top legislators, or the top leaders, rather, of the country. I feel awkward and embarrassed when talking with foreigners because I can't possibly explain to them how we are serious in saying to the world that we're prepared to put the next leader of the free world up as president of the United States. But because of my confidence in the United States and the American people, we have so much time for all of the dust to settle and for real adults to walk out there and compete for the American vote.
Oh, Congressman, now there's a lot of conversation about whether Bernie Sanders will be able to make inroads with Black and Latino voters. And just last week, former NAACP CEO Benjamin Jealous endorsed Sanders. And earlier this week, journalist and author Ta-Nehisi Coates revealed that he'll be voting for Sanders, as did Harry Belafonte. And of course, on Wednesday, Sanders had a very public sit down with Al Sharpton at Sylvia's in Harlem. Back in 2008, the Clinton campaign initially assumed that minority voters would constitute a firewall of sorts to Barack Obama's challenge. And this week, after New Hampshire, the Clinton campaign was again arguing that minority voters would flock to her and stymie Sanders. Is there any way that we could be witnessing a repeat of what happened in 2008? And do you think that minority voters might form an impression that Clinton is taking their votes for granted?
It is so sad when we talk about Bernie Sanders that not even a half a dozen of African-American black leaders on that list of supporters. And I don't think it's Senator Sanders' fault. But as John Lewis pointed out the other day, when the Congressional Black Caucus members, approximately 33 out of the 40, endorsed or re-endorsed or reaffirmed their endorsements of Hillary Clinton, it's just that a guy who spent his public life in Vermont really doesn't have the opportunity to show what they would do in a progressive way as related to improve the quality of life of black folks when they ain't none to have had demonstrated any profiles in courage. So John Lewis pointed out that, hell, throughout the civil rights struggle, he had never even met or heard of Bernie Sanders. And I pointed out that when I came to the Congress and served on the Judiciary Watergate Committee, there was Hillary Clinton serving as an intern. Then with the Children Defense Fund, there was Hillary Clinton. The health care, especially, there was Hillary Clinton. When New York really needed a state senator, there was Hillary Clinton. When the president needed a secretary, there was Hillary Clinton. There has been no struggle politically that I've been involved in the Congress that Hillary Clinton has not been a part of and demonstrated that she's earned her stripes. As far as Bernie is concerned, I don't think he's had the opportunity to earn stripes. I don't doubt his sincerity, but he just doesn't have a track record in so many areas. For a lot of people, the debates are the first time that they've heard of Senator Sanders, and that's what makes America so great.
You know, Congressman, most of our listeners and most of my friends don't realize that until 1972, when we had a presidential convention, only 20% or so of the vote was primary dictated, and 80% was made by political representatives from around the country, much as England doesn't elect their prime minister. We all changed that in 1972 so that 80% of the vote is in the primary, and it also opened up the possibility and danger of someone like Trump, with a lot of money, becoming president. You were quoted as saying his victory would be a nightmare. Many people agree with that, or the end of the republic. Let me ask you this. A lot of our listeners and a lot of people would disagree with our estimation of a Trump primary. Can you explain to them why electing Donald Trump would be dangerous for America?
Well, because we are a democracy, when we get frustrated and angry with our leadership, whether it's on the local level, our state legislature, unlike some countries, we don't pull them out and hang them and shoot them and have a revolution. We have elections. And in those elections, voters don't have to be right. They have their constitutional right to vote their frustrations and to be able to angrily and emotionally to vote against something. And in this country, when I look at the lack of hope that people have in terms of what economic advancements they're going to make, and if not them, their children, or what explosive new opportunities exist in the educational chances for the kids that the parents didn't have. All of those things now, especially since the Wall Street fiasco, allow Americans, instead of looking forward to how much greater this country can and should be, and trying to get over that hell of a financial and emotional setback we had when tens of thousands of people lost their jobs, some re-employed at lower wages. The fact that college is such an expensive thing that people for 10, 20 years are paying off loans that they've made. And, of course, the saddest thing is when 90% of the wealth of the country is held by less than 1% of the people. And the middle class, the middle class, the middle class, the ones that support local purchases and the small businesses and the ones which is the heartbeat of capitalism, don't have enough savings or enough confidence to be spending in order to keep the economy booming. And so when you take one of the billionaires who know that this frustration is out there, and he plays on this, are you happy with your government? And I think the response is, hell no. And they said, and then when you change the rules and say, do you find that I'm the only one who talks like you and speaks like you and say, let's tear the whole system down? Are you with me? And in a revolutionary way, they say, yes. There is no way in the world that I think that, that Don Trump has any ability to win an election with the American people. I do, however, truly believe that whether you for Bernie Sanders, who's talking about the aspirations of all Americans, I mean, he really sounds terrific. It's not that he's done anything, but he is clearly saying what people hope and wish that we could have, where college should be free, where the universal health care should be out there, where we don't have Wall Street dictating by billions of dollars as to who's going to survive in primary political contests, where a kid could really be heard by his parents to say, you can be anything you want, you don't have to have a billionaire or raise billions of dollars to succeed politically. But right now, we're going through this feeling where people said, ah, damn, we can still dream. And I think that the things that Donald Trump is saying, keep the Muslims out, there's something hell going on, I'm going to make America great. Well, those are things you normally hear at Coney Island with a barker, you know, the greatest show on earth. And no one asks you to prove it before you say it.
You know, Congressman.
I think it's an emotional release of aspirations that Americans have. But when the show of how many candidates they have is actually reduced, where moderators have an opportunity to say, and tell me, how do you expect to do this? I think we'll get a clearer understanding as to who would be a leader and not just someone that promises.
Yeah, I think you've defined why both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are getting a response. Well, I have an idea for you, Congressman. As I said at the beginning, you're still a young man. And the good news for New York as we come to 2017 is that you're going to have more time to spend with us in New York State. So I'm going to recommend, with a vote on the Constitutional Convention in 2017, you take the leadership in how we can fundamentally change New York and bring your wisdom to make our state great again. But anyway, Congressman, it's just been a pleasure to have you on the show. And though I'm not happy you're leaving Congress, I am very happy you're going to come back to New York and help us improve our city and state. So thank you for your service.
I may be leaving the Congress, but I'm certainly not leaving this struggle. And my wife, who I've been married to for over 50 years, said that when I proposed to her that she thought I promised to retire in Florida. I tell her, once you got that New York blood, you can forget about it. New York is going to be stuck with me as long as I can breathe.
Well,
I really look forward to working with you, Bill, and your dad would be very, very proud to see how political active you've been.
Well,
that's one
you.
Thing that no matter whether you're Republican or a Democrat, people really ought to take advantage of the opportunity that we have in this country to express ourselves politically when so many people in the world cannot participate or even express the changes they like to see. So keep up the good work, and I look forward to meeting and working with you.
Well, thank you. You're a great man.
What's your take on Congressman Rangel's thoughts about the presidential election? We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 877-970-2999 if you want to talk about the passing of Justice Scalia. Please connect with us also on social media at Effective On Air, or that's on Twitter, and on Facebook at facebook.com/Effective Radio. Once again, the number is 877-970-2999. When we come back, we're going to speak with New York City Councilman Benjamin Kalos. You're listening to Effective Radio with Bill Samuels.
News, opinion, passion. This is AM 970, The Answer.
9 degrees, going up to 15, but it still feels as though it's well below zero. Good morning. What's going on? We have the answer. Fire ripped through at least two buildings along Washington Street. That's Hoboken's main business district, leaving several first responders with minor injuries. NJ.com reports residents of the building were safely evacuated. Flames were seen coming from the top of a building at 507 Washington Street at about 10 last night. The fire also damaged a neighboring building, and NJ.com says the blaze is currently under control. A woman and child in critical condition this morning after flames broke out on the 11th floor of their building in Harlem. This happened at about 4:30 Saturday afternoon in the King Towers complex. FDNY says that two of the victims suffered smoke inhalation and were transported to the Harlem hospital. The cause of the blaze still under investigation. Well, it is really cold out there. The tri-state area hasn't seen temperatures this cold in the past 20 years. Mayor Bill de Blasio says that the city is working hard to get the homeless people off the streets and into shelters.
Last night, our homeless outreach teams helped 62 people come in from the cold. In addition, 207 individuals walked in to our health and hospitals facilities to escape the cold. So combined, almost 270 people came in.
The mayor added that the extreme cold could threaten the lives of the very old, very young, and disabled.
Wind chill values will take us down to as low as 25 below zero. This is very, very rare for New York City. And again, people have to recognize they have to take extreme precautions.
And if you've got to have it, Apple reportedly has a release date for the new iPhone and iPad models. The iPhone 5SE, revealed on Tuesday, March 15th, goes on sale 3 days later. In sports, coming up on The Answer at 1 this afternoon, Boston will host Syracuse NCAA basketball. Chris Moraro on The Answer.
There are 10 million women in New York State, and yet New York ranks just 26th in the nation for women in elected office. That's not good enough. At Eleanor's Legacy, we are building a new generation of progressive women leaders for New York. Our goal, to give women the tools and resources they need to run and win. 10 million women, one state, making history. Join us at eleanorslegacy.com.
Hi, I'm Dave Miranda, president of the New York State Bar Association. As New Yorkers, we'll soon have a unique opportunity to consider how our state government functions and to decide whether it's time for a change. Every 20 years, our state constitution lets the voters decide if we want to revise our state constitution through a constitutional convention. That question will be on your ballot in just 2 years. Now is the time to engage in a statewide conversation about whether our state constitution needs updating. Our state constitution affects the everyday lives of New Yorkers, from our children's education and our criminal justice system to protecting our Adirondack Park. The New York State Bar Association formed a special committee to examine our constitution and to see if there's a better way. Please go to nysba.org for updates and information on how we can all be a part of a thoughtful discussion on our great state's future.
Brought to you by the New York State Bar Association in cooperation with the New York State Broadcasters Association.
He's one of the few folks in New York who unnerves the governor without the authority to indict him. You're listening to Bill Samuels on Effective Radio, AM 970, The Answer.
I'm in a New York state of mind.
Our next guest is a true friend of the show and of mine, New York City Councilman Ben Kalos, who represents the Upper East Side of Manhattan. Before Morgan, the current executive director of Effective New York and my co-host, the think tank I run was run by Ben Kalos. And during those terrific years, Ben did amazing, in-depth, innovative research on how to make New York City and New York State great. In particular, with me, years ago, he took up the issue that 60% of New York City workers have no retirement security. And Ben, with the mayor and city council speaker, just in de Blasio's State of the State, said they are soon going to introduce legislation to take care of this problem. So when Ben left Effective New York to run for the city council, I was certainly proud to be one of his strongest supporters. I should also mention, and he probably won't give me any credit, I encouraged him to marry his delightful wife and be married like the rest of us. Anyway, as I knew Ben would, he's doing a great job, probably one of the most innovative city councilmen that we have. So it's a pleasure for me to introduce our listeners to this bright young leader. So, Ben, welcome to Effective Radio, and thank you for joining Morgan and I.
Thank you so very much for having me. Long-time listener since you've gotten started, and proud to be on the show, and just been a pleasure to work with you over the years with your advocacy in New York State and Albany, really following on the legacy of Howard Samuels, your father, and just being a strong, outspoken conscience for the state and city of New York.
Thank you. This week, the Speaker of the New York City Council, Melissa Mark Viverito, and I've been really impressed with her, addressed her annual State of the City address. Ben, you were obviously in attendance. What do you think were the highlights for you that you're excited about in the Speaker's speech?
As State of the City speeches go, Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito's was absolutely astounding. It really blew people away with a commitment to justice for the city of New York. I'm slightly partial as chair of the Governmental Operations Committee, which is focused on cleaning up our elections in the city of New York. And one of the items that she announced is a voter information portal, which is legislation I actually introduced based on work I did all the way back in 2007, which kind of spurred me into politics. In 2007, we have a state voter file, and one day there were 12 million voters, and the next day there were 10 million voters, and the state had lost 2 million voters. And so I had created voter search so people could verify their registration, see what party they were registered with, and where we are now, almost a decade later, is that the city would start doing this. You'd be able to look up your registration, you'd be able to apply for your absentee ballot, be able to see whether or not it got mailed to you, whether or not your absentee ballot had been received. And something that's kind of interesting that most people don't know about is you'd be able to see your voter history, which for folks on the in the know and on the inside, that's actually how we target people during election season. It's whether or not you vote in these particular types of elections, and that information would actually be shown to the individuals. Additionally, a lot of different resolutions and advocacy that we're doing, like saving the taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars, as well as just making it easier to vote by consolidating the primaries to just one day in June instead of having three different primaries this year.
Well, Councilman, I thought one of the most interesting parts of the Speaker's speech was her announcement of a new commission to be chaired by former Chief Judge of the New York State of Appeals, Jonathan Littman, that will explore possibly shutting down Rikers Island Prison. What are your thoughts on how to address the problems that have plagued Rikers?
The Speaker and this City Council have really been focused on what's happened at Rikers. We actually even had the parent of somebody who was held there on charges that were ultimately dismissed, and he unfortunately ended up taking his own life, and that is nothing that should happen to somebody, whether they're guilty or, in this case, innocent. And so a lot of the reforms that we're focused on are around decriminalization and ensuring that we can fix the system. As chair of governmental operations, I oversee the Office of Administrative Trials and Hearings, OATH, where we're doing a lot of reforms there. And under the Speaker's proposal, a lot of violations that are quality of life violations would actually go there, and people could just pay their fine there at a administrative court where you could do hearings online, and it's a lot more relaxed than having to go to civil court with an attorney. And if you miss it, you get a warrant, and then if you get caught doing something else and there's a warrant, you end up in jail. And so rather than having people in jail for very minor offenses, we would be moving over to really just writing violations and having an administrative tribunal. That being said, if people still did things that were excessive or were repetitive and items like that, criminal charges would still remain. However, in most cases, we'd hope to move towards warnings and making sure that things are handled by an administrative tribunal in a non-criminal matter.
You know, Ben, most of the public realizes that Congress is a full-time position. It rules on things that are important to all of us. We also know that Albany is a part-time and very corrupt, as we saw in the Silver and Skelos' trials, as our, many of our legislative leaders are also lawyers and consultants. So I was very proud of the recent changes in the city council, and I want to point out, despite the I think, false criticism of the recent pay increase, if the city council pay had gone to 138, as was recommended from 112, that wasn't a pay increase. If you just adjusted for inflation from 2006, all the recommendations at 138 weren't just adjusted for inflation. It wasn't really any more money. Now, the final number is 148, and there are great reasons for that. But, I'm going to let you tell our listeners why that extra $10,000 was fair.
Thank you, Bill. Bill, you've always been a strong advocate with a strong background in business for really paying people what they're worth so you can attract top quality talent, and I think that is one key piece. But I think what was overlooked is people were focused on the pay raise were the reforms. And a lot of people have spent generations fighting to clean up Albany and clean up City Hall by making it full-time. Additionally, there is something called a Lulu, which nobody knows what it is other than it sounds funny, and it stipends that the leader in Albany or in City Hall was able to give people, and almost everyone got a Lulu unless you really did something to upset them. And in the past, they've been taken away. And what we're talking about is cold, hard cash. So anywhere between $5,000 and $12,000 or $20,000. And literally, if you didn't do what you were told and you weren't a rank-and-file member, they could take away the stipend from you. And the Daily News called this legal bribery, and Citizens Union asked 51 council members, and 34 members said, we will not take Lulus and we will get rid of it. And as of last year, of the 34, I was one of 12 members who still wasn't taking it. And as for the other 20, who knows? But one thing I can say is the city council did do right by their pledge. We've gotten rid of Lulus. I was proud to sponsor that legislation. And we've also become a full-time body dedicated to the people of New York. And I will say that it is worth every dollar of that investment to ensure that lawmakers work for the people full-time without the corrupting influence of outside income or stipends.
Let me make a point. Ben, since I've worked with you, you're an incredible and very talented lawyer. And what our listeners need to understand, we ask people like Ben Kalos, who is no longer able to practice any law, to join the city council, but he's term limited. That means a representative for 8 years has to give up their basic work. And when they're done, many of them have to go back and earn a living with an eight-year gap. And that's why I think what the city council did by making it like Congress, full-time, no Lulus, not only is fair for that extra $10,000 going to $148,500, but I really congratulate the council. And I think, as you know, I'm hoping in 2018, the spirit of New York City and the reforms that have been led by our city council eventually make their way to our corrupt leaders in Albany.
Councilman, just changing subjects, and there's a bill that you have, or an idea that you have introduced in the council, which I think is really fascinating, and it hasn't gotten the exposure that I believe that it really deserves. You have a proposal to enable New Yorkers to automatically receive their social services benefits. Can you explain to our listeners what the concept is behind that and what you're trying to achieve?
Government should work like a public utility, just like your faucet in the morning. You don't have to fill out forms or applications in order to get your water turned on every time you need it. But when we're talking about things like hunger or remaining in your home with subsidies on rent, we put people through the ringer, and they have to fill out paperwork upon paperwork. They have to recertify every period of time, sometimes every 6 months, every year. And that's just not something we're used to. When you shop online on Amazon, you put in your credit card once and you're done. Imagine if every time you used Amazon, they wanted you to recertify who you are and prove who you are once again and put in all the information. You wouldn't shop online. So what we're trying to do here is use the information government already has. And so the dream would be you pay your taxes, and on that tax form, you're already telling us whether or not you're married, you're telling us whether or not that you rent or own. You're also telling us a lot of detailed information, especially if you're a business person like Bill or anyone listening who may run a small business, and you file Schedule C, and you're deducting for different parts of your income and expenses. So the government already knows a lot about you. And instead of just using that for law enforcement purposes, wouldn't it be great if when you paid your taxes, instead of having to apply for an earned income tax credit, we could just say, you know what, based on your form, here's a check in the mail. Or it looks like you're probably going to go hungry. Let's get you those food stamp or SNAP benefits, and let's just mail you an EBT card in the mail. And some states are actually already doing this. Or in the city, we have a senior citizen rent increase exemption. If somebody lives in applicable housing, rent stabilized or otherwise, and they're making within the limit, let's just get them that subsidy immediately. So instead of having to figure out whether or not you qualify, then fill out mountains and mountains of paperwork, let's just get people the benefits they need automatically. And some interesting facts. The White House and President Obama have already issued an executive order on this. There is funding in the Affordable Care Act, and there are many states that are moving forward with this, but clearly not enough. And I've called on the mayor of the city to do this, and I'm hoping that Governor Cuomo will take the federal dollars to make this happen, and working very closely with Health and Human Services on a federal level to really just make sure that as many municipalities are taking advantage of this resource.
And I know just how many people have to go slog to remote areas of the city to lose time from work to apply for their benefits. I mean, I can really see the direct benefit that will have for so many New Yorkers. Well, Councilman, there's a hearing coming up later this month on a fascinating proposal regarding the creation of a centralized registry of affordable housing. Can you explain to us what exactly that proposal entails and why you believe it's important to create such a registry?
Recent reporting by ProPublica initially identified 50,000 units, which quickly became 200,000 units of affordable housing that is receiving subsidies from the government, tax benefits, the tunes of hundreds of millions of your tax dollars that are going to real estate developers so that they will offer affordable homes. But 200,000 units aren't being registered with the state. And the state isn't really doing the enforcement it's supposed to be doing. In 1993, the state actually got rid of having any fines. And the state and the city have now announced that they will do some modest enforcement, but we don't actually know where to look. And so this legislation would require every single building receiving these subsidies to register all the affordable housing to be registered in one place. It creates a fine schedule that goes up to as much as $2,000 per unit per month. It creates a centralized portal where every one of your listeners would be able to apply for any new or affordable housing that already exists. And last but not least, because I'm not one to trust the government to do what they say they're going to do, people would actually be able to hire a lawyer or go to court themselves and say, you know what, I think there's units in this building that aren't being offered affordable that should be. And they themselves would get that $2,000 per unit per month. And so between that, we wouldn't be relying on the city to actually do its job since it's been not doing it for so long. But between, hopefully, if the city actually did it, using this resource and making it easy for people to find affordability, I'm hoping that it would make it a lot easier for New Yorkers.
Well, Ben, you certainly made me proud with your record as a city councilman. But what I like most, in addition to doing constituent services, which you do an outstanding job on, you take the time to research complex issues, dig deep, and then, as you have just discussed with our listeners, I guess they're really our leaders because they vote for us, to put forward innovative ideas that will really change the lives of our listeners. So I congratulate you. I'm sorry we don't have more time, but I look forward to following your incredible career over the next few years. So, Councilman, thank you for joining me and Morgan on Effective Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Bill, that's very exciting stuff that Councilman Kalos is working on. And just in the few minutes that we have left, I wanted to ask you about some statistics. This week you attended a budget briefing from the Fiscal Policy Institute, and you brought back this fascinating booklet for me to look at so I can bone up on the nuances of the state budget. And there's a statistic here about the top 1% of earners in New York City and New York State. Now, we hear a lot about income inequality on the federal level, but here in New York City, in 1980, 12.2% of all income went to the top 1%. In 2014, it shot up to 39% in New York City. And in New York State, from 1980, it went from 11.9% to 30.2% in 2014. Bill, what's your take on that that massive growth in income by the 1%?
Well, I sort of have a different view. I don't think it's right to say that we ought to take the same pie and figure out how to redistribute wealth. The key is, how do we grow our economy? So I'm proud that we have so many innovative business people located in New York City and New York State. But the opportunity for us to double our growth with the 99% so they can earn more have a better standard of living is government's responsibility. Let me give you a couple examples. City and State had an incredible article today on how Cooney, working with the Bronx Community College, is allowing students, giving students in the community college better tools so they can then go to CUNY free and become skilled workers and earn a lot more money. This is a very innovative program. This afternoon, despite the cold, I'm going out to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and to see the incredible growth in new young startup businesses. So I think the goal here is not to redistribute wealth, is to create a lot more wealth for the 99%. Certainly the $15 minimum wage is a start, but what we really got to do is give better tools to our young people to become successful. And we don't have time to discuss a lot of it today, but much of it focuses on education. I, for one, I'll give you just a quick example. In our schools that are in neighborhoods that make it very hard for the child to focus on his education as he should, I think we ought to go to class size of 10 or 12. So we really help those kids. So the long and the short of it is, I look at it as an opportunity to increase the wealth of the 99% by growing our economy.
Well, that's it for this week's show. We'd like to thank our whole team, Frank Morano, Philip Anderson, Eric Monocle, Ryan Edwards, Don Stevens, Jerry Crowley, Bill O'Shaughnessy. I'm Morgan Peckman, your co-host here on Effective Radio, Bill Samuels. I want to wish a very happy Valentine's Day to my lovely wife, Patricia, my wonderful daughter, Fiona. Happy Valentine's Day to you, Bill. Listen to us every Sunday at 11 a.m. Follow us on Twitter at Effective On Air and on Facebook at facebook.com/Effective Radio. Thank you for spending the morning with us. Join us next week and every week right here at the same time here on Effective Radio.